So we're going to be talking about the woman at the well, a story you've probably heard about multiple times. But I really want to kind of introduce the story by looking into my story. There's lots of different types of ways you can do a sermon. Some are like lessons that you've kind of learned. And this is really a sermon of a challenge that God has kind of been showing me this week. It really is coming out of my life. It's kind of a nitty-gritty sermon where I haven't really had this whole lesson figured out. But this is what God was really showing me and challenging me with this week. And I hope he challenges you. And the challenge I believe that God is kind of giving to me is, how do we minister in times when we feel unsettled? Because this is a time in Jesus' ministry where it wasn't a planned ministry. This is them on a journey, and they're in a time where they're very unsettled. But when they come out of this time, Jesus comes out with a ton of converts, and he starts a revival in Samaria, and the disciples come out with nothing. So I want to look at that message, but to really look at that, I think you got to kind of have to understand a little bit about me and where I come from. Most of you don't know me, but I'm the son of Ed Larimore. He's been back there. Some of you might have known Ed. He kind of spoke here. And I grew up in the church. Some of you grew up in Christian families. I grew up in the most Christian family, right? I was a pastor's kid, right? Very much, right in the center of the church. Grew up hearing about Jesus, was saved at a very early age, and I always wanted to do great things for God. That was kind of something that I always had on my mind, both just in elementary school and even coming into high school. So to do that, I was like, what should I do? I was like, I'm going to go to Bible college. So I went to Liberty University. That's where I met my wife, Jane. Liberty University is the largest evangelical school in the world, actually, right? And took a Bible degree, really was received a lot of inspiration from God, right? Kind of had a great time of growth, was moving out into the world. And my plan was to try and get a job in ministry, work on my master's, and move on with my plan to do great things for God. But as what sometimes happens in many of our lives, things don't really go according to plan. Kind of entered into that season, threw out a bunch of resumes, and kind of got it back a lot of no's. If any of you like sent out a lot of resumes, you usually get back a lot of no's, right? And I started to realize that this plan that I had of master's degree in ministry wasn't really happening out. So I entered into this time, a time of kind of transition, a time of just kind of feeling unsettled. And I ended up back here. I had worked at Alliance Redwoods. Same as where, like, John, that's kind of how I know John. We worked at Alliance Redwoods. Had worked there all through college and ended up back at Alliance Redwoods doing the same job that I was doing in college. And I kind of felt frustrated and, like, I don't feel like my life is moving forward. I really felt unsettled. And it kind of continued. I finally was able to find an internship. I kind of did an internship for a year. And the process kind of started over again. This time, me and Jane were engaged. And we just got married just last October, October 14th. But our plans for when we were getting married was to move down to Southern California. I was going to try again for this plan of going to my master's degree. I was going to go to Biola. And I was looking again for a ministry job. And same thing happens, just a lot of no's and, you know, housing and jobs, and nothing really worked out. And so completely unplanned, we're back here again. We're back here in Sonoma County. I'm still doing the same job that I was doing back in 2013 when I was going to college. And I kind of felt in my life this kind of shift in attitude, you know, because I had this time at Liberty where I was inspired and I was moving and I was trying to do this goal of doing great things for God. And all of a sudden, I kind of felt a shift. And I've been to so many times where I was unsettled and in a time of transition and my plans just didn't work out so many times that eventually my focus really kind of shifted. And I shifted into a season where I was no longer thinking about ministry or doing great things for God. And instead, I was really focused, to be quite honest, on just paying the rent, right? And it's a high rent here. But anyway, but you get focused, right? I'm trying to just kind of make money and like kind of focus on me and Jane's just kind of physical needs, paying for things, getting through the season, and just kind of trying to get out, right? Getting out of this unsettled season and kind of moving on to something else. And what God was challenging me with this in this passage is, I think so often in our lives, we choose when and when not we do ministry. And we don't really think of ministry, and we don't think of the purpose of God when we're in times that are unsettled. And I think what this passage is really showing us is that sometimes our greatest ministry can happen in times when we feel unsettled. But most of us don't know how to do it, right? We don't know how to do ministry in times that things are unsettled. I can kind of think back even to just my friends, right? Again, I went to a Bible college, right? Our motto was training champions for Christ, right? So we all had this inspirational vision of doing great things for God. And you see it, you know, everyone has that inspiration and common inspiration. But when they go out into the world and plans don't work out and things become unsettled, some people are still able to do ministry through that. And they're able to see the impact of God and they can impact the communities around them. But many, they never figure that out. And they spend most of their lives in this season of feeling unsettled and just trying, like I'm trying to do not right now, just trying to make ends meet. And we're never really able to experience the power of God in our lives and Him working through us because we don't know how to minister in times when things feel unsettled. And I believe that this is just really such an important message, because if we don't minister in times when we feel unsettled, the people that we interact with on a day-to-day basis, on when we're in these times where we feel stuck and unsettled, they'll never really hear the gospel, right? Like you can even just see in this scenario, right? Both Jesus and the disciples enter in a time of transition. They're just kind of traveling from one place to another. And the disciples are so focused on getting out of this place and moving from one place to another that they miss all the opportunities of ministry. But Jesus takes advantage of it. But if Jesus was not here to do this ministry, the Samaritans would have never heard. This woman at the well would have never heard about Christ. And through her, the whole town, right, this whole city would not have been converted. There would have been no Christian reach in this community for years to come because the disciples kind of kept their eyes on their own plans and their own goal, and they weren't able to minister in times when they were unsettled. So this passage really hit me because I feel like I'm in a time where I feel unsettled, kind of in a time of transition. And some of you, it might look a little bit differently. Like for us, it's kind of a location. We didn't really expect to even be in this place or this job. But I think there's lots of things that can cause us to feel unsettled. For some of you, it just might be money. Money just might be tight right now. And that's an unsettling feeling. You might be in a place that you enjoy, but your whole focus might simply be on making ends meet at the time of the budget. And Christmas might be a great time and you'll sing praises to God, but really you're just thinking about how you can pay for all the Christmas gifts and all the expenses that come at the end of the year. Some of you might feel unsettled because you might have financial things going well, but your job is really not the job you want. And so you feel unsettled because you don't feel fulfilled or purpose in your job. And so your whole focus is just trying to get out of this job that you hate and into something that you really enjoy. For some of us, we can always feel unsettled when things like family kind of come up. A lot of you I know have young kids, right? That's a unsettling thing, right? There's a lot of your energy that can get pulled into this family and just trying to, you know, keep the kids not crying like crazy for a few seconds, you know? And it can be an unsettling time, right? We feel that when these in times of unsettlement, and so often our focus goes from our visions of ministry that we always kind of had, and it goes to just kind of our own physical needs in these times of unsettled. And I don't think that's really what God has for us. I believe that God has more, right? Like John was saying, that God has more for us during this time period. I think we can learn from it in this passage. So as we go through this passage, I'm going to really be contrasting Jesus and the disciples, right? Because if you look at them, they are really in the same scenario. And the scenario is kind of this. They had just come from a time of ministry. The passage says they were just in Judea, right? This was the kind of the center place of a lot of Israel's culture, right near Jerusalem. And they had begun kind of this movement and this starting of this ministry. And it says that many, many people were being baptized. So if you want to talk about an inspirational time, these disciples have really experienced an inspirational time. They have been with Jesus, right, literally walking with Jesus, and they've been having just effective ministry like crazy. And they're baptizing all these people with Jews, and they're all hyped and ready for ministry. And then they leave that time, similar to like how I left Liberty, right? You're leaving this time of inspiration, and they go into this journey from Judea to Galilee. And their plan is to kind of go do more ministry in Galilee. And they're along the way, and the disciples' focus shifts, and they're no longer focused on ministry. If you look in this passage, I'll have you maybe, this is kind of a thinker, this is a question. What do you think the disciples are focused on during the time of this passage? Food, exactly, right? They're focused on having their own physical needs. Is there anything else you think the disciples might be focused on? Well, I think
they were concerned about Jesus. They wanted to take care of him too.
Taking care of him, yeah. So they're concerned about, right, their food, their needs, and Jesus' needs. And this is not really exactly the passage, but I think they're also concerned about getting to Galilee, right? If you know anything about how the Jews and the Samaritans were, the Jews hated Samaritans. When most people made this journey, when they were going from Judea to Galilee, they would actually skirt all the way around Samaria, even though it would take longer, because they hated being in Samaria. And the reason for this is kind of twofold. The Samaritans believed very differently than they did. It was kind of a syncretist religion where they mixed in kind of some of the idol worship as well as some of the Judaish traditions. And so it caused a lot of conflict because they religiously believed very differently. There's also a lot of animosity because the Samaritans were interbreeded. So during one of the times of captivity, the Jews were taken out, captured by the Assyrians. And while they're gone, the Jews that were still left in the area intermarried with all these other people groups that were brought in by the Assyrians. And then when the Jews return, and if you hear the Nehemiah and people have started to rebuild the walls, the Samaritans were actually involved in the groups that stood against them. And they kind of pushed against the building of Jerusalem and the establishing of the state. So it caused all this animosity because these were people that were Jewish at one point, but they're kind of intermarried, and then they kind of stood against Israel. So there's always a hatred between the Jews and the Samaritans. So I think one of the forefront things that are on the disciples' mind is, one, their own physical needs of getting food, but also I think they're just trying to get out of this place, right? They're in a place where they feel unsettled. They hate being in Samaria. They're like terrified that they even have to walk on this ground because they're with all these Samaritans, and they hate it, and they're trying to get through, and I think they're trying to go to Galilee to restart this ministry. Right? They had this ministry going, and they have this other ministry. And to me, I can just relate so much to the disciples because I think so often this is how I am in my life. I go from a time of inspiration, and I have a plan for ministry, and then my whole focus is on just providing for my physical needs and getting out of this transition and moving on to my plan of ministry, right? Which for the disciples was Galilee. But when we look at Christ, we see a very, very different focus. What was Jesus focused on during this passage? The Samaritans? The woman at the well. Yeah, Jesus instead, even though he's in this time of transition, he's done the planned ministry, he has a plan for ministry, he's looking beyond that plan, right? And I think he's looking for how God can help fulfill his purpose, right? Jesus' purpose is to show himself to the world, right? And he fulfills that even when it's outside of his plans. And so my first point is this. I believe if we want to be able to do ministry in times when we feel unsettled, we need to serve a God who is above our plans. We need to serve a God who is above our plans. And again, I said, I so relate to the disciples in this because I believe the disciples, it's not like they're horrible people. I believe God was in their plans, right? They have a plan for ministry within Galilee, but God was not above their plans, right? And so I think so often in my life, I serve a God who's in my plan, right? If you ask me like how I plan for the future, you would see God written all over, right? I want to do ministry here and do ministry there or whatever. But when the plan gets shifted, right, and I'm in a time where it's not according to my plan, all of a sudden I get thrown and I'm unsettled, and my whole focus is just getting back to the plan, right? Because I'm serving a God who's in my plan, but I'm not serving a God who's above my plan. And you see Jesus very differently. When things get unsettled, he's in the time of transition, his focus is still on doing the will of the Father, no matter what the plan is, right? Because to Jesus, God was a God who was above his plans. And most of his ministry was in times not where he had it planned out, but when people were just coming to him. And you even see in this passage, right, he has the same physical needs as the disciples. He's weary. He's worn out. He's tired. That's why he's sitting at the well. But even though his plan is not to do ministry right now, and he sees it as a time of him resting, he's always willing to be sensitive to the people around him and to the God he serves, because the God he has is above his plans. And so for some of you, I think that's kind of what you need to hear today. You need to hear that God is a God who's above your plans, and we need to be open and willing to do God's ministry. If we want more, like John was saying, we need to be able to do ministry even when it's outside of our plans. But I think, and to really kind of illustrate this, I kind of want to use a little bit of an illustration. It's kind of a funny one. So I guess I'm working at Alliance Redwoods, and I do zipline tour guiding, but I'm also, I work on accommodations. It's kind of slow right now, and so we clean up after people. That's like our job. And it seems like a kind of a menial job, but it's kind of part of my plan, right? I'm trying to provide for my family right now, and that is just kind of how I believe that God's kind of having me do it. So it was like one of my first few weeks on the job, and I got called to clean out a toilet, right? So it was a toilet clogged, and it falls on us. Like, the disgusting job falls on us. So I go into this room, and usually there's no one there when I'm unclogging a toilet, but it turned out there's like a student there. It's like fifth or sixth grade little guy. And I'm like kind of saying hi to him and kind of interacting, but really my focus, right, is on this toilet, right? Because that's the plan, and that's what I'm here to do. So I'm starting to get this unclogger out. This is a real story. Anyway, so I'm here, and I'm trying to unclog this toilet, right? And so while I'm doing this kid kind of starts talking to me, and I'm like, well, this is kind of weird, you know, I'm mostly focused on the toy, but I start, like, I kind of doing the, you know, like, just kind of, to kind of keep him talking. He starts talking, he likes dogs, right? So he's talking about these books that he reads about rescue dogs. I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting, you know, like, and I'm kind of just kind of mostly focused on the toilet. And he starts talking about how in these books, these dogs reincarnate, which apparently, I guess, is, like, the new thing with these rescue dog things, where, like, one dog dies, but, it, like, he reincarnates, and he's, like, another dog that looks after the same owner. And I'm like, I'm a philosophy major, so I actually find some of that stuff kind of interesting. But I really couldn't be all that interested because I'm really annoyed right now because this toilet is like not unclogging. For whatever reason, I'm like having trouble unclog a toilet. I'm like, this is like my first few days on the job. If I can't unclog a toilet, I can't do this job. And my plan, right, is to use this job to make money, to get time through this time of transition. And it all has to do with this toilet. And so I can't really talk about reincarnation right now. So he like talks, he's like, you know, reincarnation is kind of a weird concept. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of weird, you know. And then I'm like, right back, focus on my toilet, trying to get this thing unclogged. And so then he starts talking about how this dog kind of enters, finally through reincarnation, enters this, to this version of heaven, right? He like comes up on the shores and stuff like that. And he's like, I don't know if heaven's really like that, you know? It's like, I kind of wonder what heaven is. And again, you'd think, you know, I'd get the idea and like try to minister to this guy. But no, I'm like still focused on like clogged toilet 101. And so I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool. It's probably, you know, heaven probably isn't like that. Back to the toilet, right? And so then he all of a sudden he goes, I wonder if I'm going to get to heaven. Right? He goes, because I, you know, I don't say curse words like my brother, and I think I'm kind of good. I think I'm kind of good enough, and I think I could get into heaven. And so finally, right, my focus is finally out. I finally get my focus from this toilet, right, that I'm kind of focused on, and like, oh my gosh, right? Like, this is like a ministry opportunity, right? And this is actually a pretty terrible story, because by the time I finally get refocused and start being like, I could actually talk to him about how we could actually get to heaven, I miss my opportunity. Other people come in and we get back to talking about the toilet, and I probably never see this student again, right? And it's a terrible story because I missed this opportunity, but I think this is such an illustration of our lives, because we get these plans and we're planning to go to Galilee, we're planning on doing ministry, and we're going through these times that we feel unsettled, and we get so focused on the toilets of life that we lose sight of the ministry that God brings right to our doorstep. Wow. And to me, that was just like such a, I don't know, key moment in my life where I'm like, wow, God, you are bringing what I plan to do in the impact right to my doorstep. And I'm too focused here on this toilet, right? This insignificant clogged toilet, because all my focus goes there when times are unsettled. So I believe in order for us to avoid that and to move our situation away from that, we need to serve a God who's above our plans. And we'll do ministry outside of them. Amen. And I think there's another way that we can look at this passage, and that is, I think we need to learn that if we want to do ministry in times when we feel unsettled, we need to reach out to people that are outside of our group. So if you think, we've all talked about what people's goal and what's purpose one, but who were the disciples thinking about in this passage? Who were they concerned about? Jesus and themselves, right? They were concerned with the people in their group. Who was Jesus concerned about? The outsiders, the Samaritans. And I think that's another barrier that I think we hit and that the disciples hit in this passage, you see, because there's a lot of barriers that prevented them from ministering to the Samaritans. The first is, right, this animosity, right? They were looked down upon, both because they had disagreement with them and because there's this past hatred, right? But there's actually even more social barriers that were going on. And the second is the fact that this was a woman. So we don't really understand this in our society, but in their society, it was very, very unusual for a man to talk to a woman. It was kind of a little bit more of a patriarchal society, or at least a very different society than what we're in. And you would usually talk to either the woman's father, or you would talk to their husband. And you wouldn't really talk directly to a woman. So even the fact that Jesus would make this conversation with this woman, even if the disciples had planned to do ministry in Samaria, they probably would have never actually gone to this woman. They probably would have never talked to her. And there's another reason why they probably would have never talked to this woman, and that's because this woman, not only was she Samaritan, not only was she a woman, but she was actually an outcast in her own society. This woman was coming to the well, it says it was at the sixth hour, which was around noon. And this is like kind of almost like a desert-type climate, and it was very unusual for people to come to the well at noon, because this was the heat of the day. And if you're doing work, like pulling stuff out of the well, you wouldn't do it in the heat of the day. I don't know, if you can think of like certain cultures where they have like the siesta, right? They don't do a lot of their outside work during the middle of the day. And the reason she's coming is because she was outcast. Most of the women of the well would come during the evening. And she specifically chose not to come during the evening because these women probably looked down upon her. And she was outcast from that society, probably because, and Jesus kind of points to it, she's had five husbands, right? She was someone that was kind of ostracized by society because of her actions. And I think it's so interesting, right? Because the disciples would have never, ever thought that this was a woman they would want to minister to or that they would even interact with. But Jesus sees this as a ripe opportunity, and he reaches out to that person. He's worried about the spiritual needs of people outside of his group rather than the physical needs of people inside of his group. And I think that's such a powerful word, I think, for us today, because I think it's so easy in the times when we feel unsettled to really narrow our focus, right? And rather than thinking about the spiritual needs of the people around us and that weird person that you see at the coffee shop or the family member that you hate hanging out with, so often when we get unsettled, our focus goes right to our family, right? Our group, whether it's your group of friends or your family, like, let's just provide for my family and take care of those physical needs. And we lose sight of the spiritual needs of these people that are outside of our group. But if you want to have ministry, we can't do ministry if we're only focused on the physical needs of our group. You know, Jesus's ministry, it's a different type of model of ministry than you really normally see. Because most of it, he really wasn't kind of always reaching out and kind of having these big campaigns and stuff like that. He did a little bit of that, but a majority of his main things of ministry was when people were coming up to him. People who were troubled, people who were sick, and people who were questioning. This woman was troubled, and she was questioning, and she was coming up to him. And the reason why Jesus' ministry was so effective was not because he was pushing down doors or stuff like that, but because he was open to all groups of people, right? Anyone who was troubled, anyone who was sick, anyone who was questioning, he would go to them and he could present them with truth. And I think we could have such an impact and such a great ministry to these people that are troubled and questioning and sick, but we don't do it because they're outside of our group. And instead, we simply focus on the physical needs of the people inside of our group, and we never expand because we never look outside. Bill Hybels wrote a popular book. It's called Walk Across the Room. And it was kind of his rethinking of this evangelism type concept. And he said he's the pastor of a mega church, right? So they have these great, you know, evangelism campaigns. But then one time he was at a meeting and he looked across the room and he saw a guy who'd probably never talked to. He was an African American. You could tell by the way he dressed that he was Muslim. And Bill Hybels kind of felt the calling, right? He was kind of in tune with the Spirit, kind of felt God calling him to go out and talk with him. Again, someone that he would never normally associate with. So he decides to reach out, right? Go outside of his group, and he talks with this man, and he begins a whole relationship that they have. They start having coffee and stuff like that. And that throughout that whole year, he kind of meets with this guy, and eventually this guy becomes saved. And Bill Hybels kind of thinks back on that concept. He's like, you know, what really happened wasn't me kind of trying to do this big planned thing. He goes, really, it was just God kind of speaking for me to go out to someone that was outside of my group. And I think it's such a key such a key concept for us to get, especially right now. You know, Sonoma County is not known as like an open ground where we can just minister to a lot of people. I think the number of church people in Sonoma County is about the same percentage as some Muslim countries, right? It's something that's very kind of against us. And a lot of times we're going to interact with a lot of people that think very differently, that act very differently, and that we're sometimes uncomfortable with. If we're all being honest, there's some weird people in Sonoma County. Okay? There's some weird people. But I believe in this time, I think there's a lot of people that are troubled, and that are questioning, and some that are sick, right? If you think about the fire, right? This fire has destroyed the world, destroyed the whole mindset of a lot of people, because all these material possessions that they put their time into have been stripped away. And I believe, like Jesus was saying in this passage, the field is ripe for the harvest, but we need to get our mind off of just the physical needs of our group and look outside and reach out and touch the people that are outside of it. And I think it's also a really cool time for this type of a passage because we're going into Christmas. And I know this seems kind of weird, but sometimes the people in our extended family, even though they're our family, are really people outside of our group. We all have those family members that are just different, that we really would never, ever hang out with if we didn't have this weird blood relationship somewhere, and that forces us to be in rooms with them, right? And I think we have a choice, right? We have a choice. Are we going to just kind of stick with our group, or are we going to walk across the room, and sometimes it's even to a family member, and really interact with them and interact with their world? And I think one of a cool example of this was with my mom's family. So my mom's family lives out in Missouri. She has a big family. And one of the members of our family is my cousin Mark. He's like my cousin once removed, he's older though. He's like 40 or something like that, 40 or 50. And I had never met my cousin Mark. So again, family group, right? Blood relation, but he's very much outside of my group because I had never met him. But it was two Easters ago. I think two Easters ago, we had a big family gathering. sometimes you'll have a big family gathering around Christmas. It kind of reaches out, and all these extended family that you usually don't meet kind of come. And Mark is very different than us, thinks very differently than us. He's in the kind of the theater scene. He's a homosexual, you know, just very, very different from the traditional type of family structure and the type of way that we grew up. And we kind of had a choice, right? He's at this event, and we could either kind of just stick with our own group and kind of interact with each other, or we could reach out and go outside of our group. And we were able to reach out. We were able to ask Mark just questions about his life and what has gone on. And he was able to open up about a lot of past pain. He'd come from an abusive home, right? And he was finally able to open up about that type of pain and really feel accepted by our group, probably for some of the first times, right? And he was able to have this type of significant holiday, not just a holiday where you see each other and you eat food together, but a significant holiday where we really make connections with it. And it happened because we were able to step outside of our group and be aware of his spiritual needs, even though he's someone that's very different than us. And I think some of you might have some people that come into your mind right now, both either in your community or in your family, that you need to step outside of your group to interact with. And I think that's what we need to do if we want to have this type of impact, even in times when we feel unsettled. And finally, I think in order for us to really have an impact in times when we feel unsettled, I think we need to be able to be aware and listen to the rest of the members of the body of Christ. And I think this is what's kind of really interesting about this passage, is because what happens is the disciples get back, right? So the disciples had gone off to get food. They come back and they see Jesus interacting with this woman. And what does the passage say that the disciples did when they see Jesus again and they come back? They marveled, right? So the disciples come back and they marvel that he's talking with this woman. And how do they interact with Jesus? What do they say?
Nothing.
They say nothing, right? And it even says in the passage, it's like they didn't ask questions about what are you doing and why are you doing this and why are you talking with this woman. And I think the disciples really missed this point because they're with Jesus, right? The model of all this type of ministry. And he's doing this type of effective ministry even while he's in a time of unsettled. And they have a chance to learn it, right? They're seeing him doing it. They have a chance to learn it. But they miss it because they don't ask questions about it. They stand back and they're like, wow, that's really weird that he's talking with this woman. But they never really ask him questions about it. And Jesus kind of has to really kind of rebuke them and really kind of force in this message. And the passage actually never really says whether or not the disciples ever got it at all. They might still be concentrated on food, and throughout these 2 days of ministry where Jesus is causing a revival in this whole town, they might never have actually taken the time to actually ask Jesus what he was doing and learned how to do this type of ministry. And I think for us as a body, and this is why I think it's kind of really exciting that I get to do this in this church, because this church has really been started and has really been set up by people that have learned how to do ministry when times are unsettled, right? This is not some sort of planned church plant that kind of happened about from some mega church. This started with John, who was in the midst of a time of, he was working and had family obligations and was kind of unsettled or whatever, but kind of felt God's leading and kind of moved him out. And a lot of the people in this church, they're doing this type of ministry where they have this life going on and they feel unsettled, but they're able to reach out and still listen to the calling of God. And I think that we could do this so much more effectively if we just talk with each other, right? If we interact with each other. This is who I'm praying for. This is who I want to minister to. How do you think I should go about this? How are you going about this? How are you ministering to the people outside of your group? And so I want to kind of end the service in kind of a different way. I'm going to pray. You know, I'm going to pray about this. And then I would like to open it up for a time of sharing. And it doesn't have to be anything super significant, but just wanted to hear back, what is God doing in your life? You know, what are you thinking about? Are you in a time that you feel unsettled? Are you having names kind of pop to your head of people that you should minister to? What are you praying for this Christmas season? How do you want to do ministry? And how can we help you? How can we encourage one another? So that's what kind of where we're going to go with this. I'm going to pray. We're going to have a time of sharing, and then we'll end in worship. Does that sound good? All right, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we just thank you so much for the model of Jesus, Lord. Not only for our own personal lives, but for how we do ministry, Lord. And I thank you for challenging me, Lord, how to do ministry even in a time when I feel unsettled. And I pray that you would just continue to work in us, Lord, work in us as a community. Help us be a community that ministers even in times when we feel unsettled. And I pray that you would just be with us, help us have a great time of sharing, and really understand how you would have us minister in your name to those around us. In your name we pray. Amen.